Cinema Tour. Polo and Pan. December 11th, Place Belle. One night only in Montreal. Get tickets now at eventco.ca. Polo and Pan, Cyclorama Tour.
Stand with Wet'suwet'en. McGill University must divest from TC Energy. A community campus action on Wednesday, December 1st, taking place just inside the Milton Gates at James Square. With poetry, speeches, and music, McGill University invests over $4.7 million into TC Energy Corporation, the company that is building the Coastal GasLink pipeline on Indigenous Wet'suwet'en lands. Now is the time for McGill University to divest from TC Energy. Join us for a campus community action at 5:30 on Wednesday, December 1st. This event is co-hosted by Divest McGill, the Indigenous Student Alliance, and is co-presented by CKUT Radio. See you there.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio. From drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between, professional, student, and community productions in and around Montreal, Chipchage, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah DeA, recording from home on Thursday, November 25th, 2021. On tonight's show, my guests, The Siegel Center Goes to the Dogs with Super Dogs, the musical, director Sarah Rodriguez.
Coming back from this interminable intermission, being back in the room is so beautiful and so meaningful and so like, oh yes, this is home in many ways.
And animal trainer Danielle Pichette on her dogs starting up on the stage.
They're just like, okay, I mean, we're good. We're working with that lady and it's okay, mom, stay outside. We're going to just play with her now. And
The Love Trial, a new work that mixes the Greek muses with an addiction support group from writer Kiki Dranius.
We're all yearning for love. We all want love. We all want approval. So I took these 8 notions of love and I took these addiction issues and I came up with The Love Trial.
And Anana Ridvald explores life on the spectrum in Silence of Sky.
Once you get used to all of those hardships, and if you get through it, you realize what a gift it is to have a child with special needs.
Now, something cool about tonight's show is that we have 2 guests per show this evening, director slash writer and performer joining us in each chat. With scheduling, we don't always get the chance to speak with more than one person at a time. I hope you enjoy hearing 2 different perspectives from each show that we're going to spotlight tonight. Now, let's get started. Have you ever attended the Super Dogs show as a kid, or maybe with the little kids in your life? I know I've had. It's a memory that looms large from my childhood. The mega successful company brings show dogs, their trainers, and their tricks to audiences around North America. Over 30 million audience members and counting, and they have had a couple of TV specials to boot. But you might not know that Super Dogs is also a Made in Montreal story. It started out in this city over 40 years ago. Super Dogs Chief Operating Officer Leonard Chase and his co-writer John Halpin have created a simple but timeless story for the theater, a girl and her beloved dog, Chloe and Bear. They want to join the Super Dogs and they'll do whatever it takes to get on stage. So which Montreal theater is going to the dogs by staging what they call the world's first ever canine musical? Well, it's the Siegel Center. The cast has kids, live musicians, and 24 talented dogs. And overseeing it all is director Sarah Rodriguez, a Montrealer splitting her time between Colorado and California right now. Sarah and one of the animal trainers, Danielle Pichette, joined me last Friday to talk about the challenges of working with live animals, why we all love dogs so much, and the many, many puns involved with super dogs. The show begins previews this coming Sunday and opens December 2nd, running until the 19th. Here is our conversation. Welcome to Upstage, Danielle and Sarah. Thank you both so much for being here. How are you both today?
Good.
I'm excited.
So these are two very different strands of entertainment coming together, live dog performances and live musical theater. I want to hear from both of you. What are people's reactions when you say, I'm working on Super Dogs, the musical? Sarah, you go first.
Oh, gosh. It's usually come again. honestly, I get a lot of, every time I try to explain the show, because I find myself having to say, we're not doing cats, but with dogs. It's not, that's not the brand. and when I explain it, I do have to tell people, like, yes, I do hear myself. I am hearing what I'm saying. And this is, and I said what I said. I mean, there are two reactions. There's also the group of people who know Super Dogs and who've been fans of Super Dogs or who grew up with them. So they're really excited and want to know how theater fits into it. Like, they're kind of like, okay, so is there a story? Are they actually singing? Are the dogs singing? And then you've got the musical theater people who ask, okay, wait, but are there actual dogs? But then are there humans too? And then what do the dogs? Yeah, it's great. It's just so fun to try to explain it. And in the end, I'm like, you're just going to have to come see it.
Yeah, that's the answer.
Really?
So Sarah, coming from the musical theater world, Danielle, as a Super Dogs trainer, coming from a different kind of performance world, what do people say to you?
Actually, you were asking about the reaction of people, and for now, I'm still working on my own reaction about all that. And because it almost does not make sense to have a dog doing like acting on a live stage, and I'm still like having this sinking to me and happening. So I haven't like even get the time to discuss. I mean, like, putting those words in the same sentence, like saying that my dogs are in a live musical play in that same sentence, it's almost like so crazy to see this coming to life and happening. I'm still realizing it, and it's very it's such a challenge. It's fun. I mean, but I can totally understand that people don't get it, because I'm not sure I totally get it myself now.
I love that frankness. So let's just get this out of the way once and for all, though. The dogs are not singing, correct?
No. Well, sometimes they're not supposed to.
But sometimes there's music and you get a little howl and they match pitch, and we're okay with that.
So these dogs, though, are trained performers. Danielle, how much training does it take to get a dog ready to perform in front of a paying audience?
Well, honestly, I'm from the wrangling on movie and TV sets background. So that's what I do for a living. But usually you're going to just do more takes and end up with what you want. And it's going to be done. But now it's the same. But on stage, and it's not like I can stand behind the camera because there's none, so I kind of have to be out of the picture totally. So it's quite the challenge to train this. But when we did our first tumble through, and I was looking at my dog being there and already being so good with all of what was happening, and the singing and the people dancing with props and staying there and not looking for me for direction or like what's going on, and just going with all of that so good, I was like, you know, it's all the past almost 12 years of all of what we did, the shows, the movies, the travel, the trials, the training, it's all blended right there, and it's coming to this. But it's a lifetime of a super well-filled life, dog life, that makes that possible, I believe. You know, it's not just training. It's all of the dog I've been through and went through, and now it's just like all blending together and making this happen.
That is the voice of Danielle Pichette, who is an animal trainer involved with Super Dogs, the musical coming to the Siegel Center. Sarah Rodriguez is the director. Sarah, so tell us about the story. We do exist in the Super Dogs universe for this tale, right? No pun intended.
We have realized how many like dog puns there are in natural speech through working with this show. Yeah, we do exist in the Super Dogs world, and we actually have a really like a lovely way in. There's this young girl named Chloe, played by Zoe Brown, who's like the star of all stars. She has this small dog, and she wants her dog to be a super dog. She's a big fan. And so she sneaks into the rehearsal hall and kind of makes her way into becoming a super dog trainer. So we actually get an interesting way into super dogs and that world and what it is. We get a really good introduction.
For you as a director, like, I know that in Hollywood, in film, there's this adage of you don't work with animals and children. Obviously, this is live theater, which doesn't make it any less complicated, but you have child actors, dog performers, and live musicians on stage. When you're working on this as the director, like, are you thinking about all the ways it could go wrong, or like
all day, every day,
everything that could happen on stage?
I think honestly, that's just part of the job, is thinking of all those things. And it's not just what could go wrong, but I think my job is really like, how do we move forward? You know, just how do you adapt to things? And that is part of the magic of live theater, is things, not even when they're as accurate as possible, there's always a little breath that's different, you know? So like, that's part of the job, to think about that, to think about the possibilities and how things could be different and how to adapt. So I'm constantly thinking about that. So in that way, this show is not that different. Like, that is always there. It's just that there is this new element to my world that I didn't understand, and that I don't want to say I fully understand it yet, because like Danielle said, it's a lifetime of work. So I definitely don't want to say, oh, I get it now. I don't. I have an iota, and I have the expertise of people like Danielle in the room for that. The same way that you have a music director who has the musical expertise when you work on a musical. So yeah, it's like, it's the same, but it is a piece I knew less of, because I missed dog training class when I was going through theater school.
So I want to ask both of you what rehearsals are like. Is there I can just imagine there's so much energy in the room. You know, is it the kind, and you know, is rehearsal different or weird because you have all these different elements at play? And not weird in a bad way, like weird in a good way.
Yes and no. I think there's also another, you know, this unspoken element of we're in a pandemic, you know? So there's a lot of energy, and to me, a lot of emotional energy, because coming back from this interminable intermission, like being back in the room is so beautiful and so meaningful. And so like, oh yes, this is home in many ways. So I think that has fueled a lot of energy to be able to do a big show like this after the trauma, you know, and still in it. I'm not trying to say the pandemic's over just because, you know, we're over it, but it's not over. So there's that element. And I mean, you've got 24 dogs around. Like, yeah. there's no one is not smiling. You can't. Yeah. There are 24 dogs running around. And at the very least, and of course, they're not all there all the time, but, you know, we certainly have two at the very least always there. Yeah, the energy is lovely. And it's not that strange. It's not that strange, but there is that one more element that we have to check in and know that we're not the experts. So Danielle has answered a lot of my dumb questions.
Danielle, over to you. What's rehearsal like? What's your viewpoint behind the scenes?
I think I approach it a lot like when we work on movie sets, because we need to find like the vantage point on how to make it look the way we want, without me really being here, and how can we like make that happen and work the magic around like having that dog with all of what he knows, do what we expect from him and make it look good, because it's not just like the end result but the whole feel about the play. So I'm pretty good with that. I mean, the energy is different when we just work with my own dogs, and it's more like two more actors rehearsing with the other actors than when it's like the big show with all the dogs and all the energy, and especially like that super dog show part where it's meant to be so crazy and active. But when it's more about the play, for me, I feel kind of home. I'm not too surprised with that, but it's very nice to have all those very talented and professional person, but like Sarah said, like everyone is smiling, everyone is there. I mean, the dog are not just a prop being a disturbance or a problem in the room. It's part of it, and everyone's rolling with it so nice, and it's fun. It's very fun. It's very motivating, and it's more not natural, but it's less weird than we could have thought it would be. Like, I mean, it's just like, okay, let's do this. That, and I believe that since my both my dog stepped into that so nicely and fast, we're not out of the woods. We still have to rehearse so much, but I mean, a lot of question I had in my mind before starting that have been like solved and quickly, like they're just like, okay, I mean, we're good, we're working with that lady, and it's okay, mom, stay aside, we're gonna just play with her now. And so all of that being already like done, I mean, it's very fun, and we get to enjoy like working on just like the tiny diddles and make it even better. And but there's a lot that is good now, and that we can just enjoy the moment more, because a few questions are out of the picture now.
I bet a lot of your questions are just about what you were saying, is like the dog being comfortable and being like in a safe space and adjusting to a new reality. But it sounds like from what you're telling me, like they're happy to be there. Like they're enjoying their experience.
My dogs, they love to work. They really need the job. That's why they don't eat up my whole house when we're home and not doing anything, because when we're doing stuff very motivating for them, and they get the satisfaction and to feel like they are doing something that makes a difference. They succeed, because I mean, even when it's not perfect, we make them feel that they're getting there and they're succeeding in what they do, so they are content with themselves, and they really need that. And Squat especially lives for the crowd. He lives for the clap, you know. He needs to be cheered on. I mean, even when people are clapping for someone else, he feels it's for him, and he's just like, I guess it's for me, and he's so happy. And so yeah, I mean, those specific dogs that doing this role loves it and live for that, live for doing things and being active and the result, and having people like in awe with them, with all what they do. And we try not to laugh too much when they do like silly things, but they know what they can do to make us make us laugh and almost cry too, right?
I feel like we could take everything you just said and put actor in for dog, because we have a lot of stereotypes about actors who need to be, you know, in front of an audience and have a lot of energy and validation too. But I say that in good spirits. I'll leave the last word to you, Sarah. I know that Lisa Rubin, the executive director at the Siegel Center, when she announced this, and she knew it would come out of left field for a lot of people, but she said dogs have been a lifeline for many people, pandemic puppies, people acquired pets. Hopefully they're still holding on to their pets now that things are going back to normal, that dogs have been a source of comfort in a really difficult time. Is that something you've been thinking about while working on the show?
Oh, it's been very present. Well, I'm a huge animal lover.
You have to be.
Yes, right? But absolutely, like I think the connection that, especially in this time of isolation, like the connection between human and animal and in company, the love. I mean, I'm trying not to say the words unconditional love because it's one of the songs in the play, but I guess I just should say it and be on the nose. But that connection you have with an animal, like it's unparalleled, you know, when you connect with. And especially, yeah, I think especially in this time when everybody has, if you had animals before, like you were home all the time. And so we had, you know, our relationship with them and became much stronger. And if you didn't, many of us, like many people got animals. They're not just a source of comfort and of therapy, and they're incredible for mental health. You know, there's just so many benefits to that connection. And so I think it's the perfect time to be doing a show like this. I think it's in a way an ode and an homage and I have a sort of reverence to, you know, animals. Thank you for keeping us sane and loving us no matter what.
It's for sure going to be a cathartic and heartfelt performance, that's for sure, especially for people who are just coming back to the stage as well. Thank you both so much, Sarah and Danielle, for taking the time. I wish I could be there with you in rehearsal because it sounds like such a blast, but we're so glad that you could take us behind the scenes. Thank you both.
Thank you.
That was Super Dogs, the musical, director Sarah Rodriguez and animal trainer Danielle Pichette. The show opens to previews this Sunday, November 28th, with regular shows until December 19th. Tickets are $68 with discounts for groups, seniors, students, and those under 30. Tickets at 514-739-7944 or siegelcenter.org. The human cast includes Zoe Brown of the Hockey Sweater musical. She plays Chloe. There's also Dakota Jamal Wellman and Trevor Barrett, among others, and of course the Super Dogs, who all have incredible names, which I will name here. There's Spade and Squat, who share the role of main dog, Bear, plus Bravo, Champagne, Dacquery, Fabio, Halo, Jamboree, Joan Jett, Luca, Monster, Mordecai, Ooh La La, Pigeon, Raven, Razzle, Retro, Sambuca, Skelos, Sprite, Tesla, Wonder Woman, Zephyr, and Zuma. And of course, I will also be hosting Sunday at the Siegel, the show adjacent panel discussion for Super Dogs, this coming Sunday at 11. This time, my panel and I will be discussing the rules, the challenges, and the beauty of working with live animals like show dogs. I think this is going to be a really interesting conversation about a form of entertainment that is so fun, but it's also really strict. We're going to go behind the scenes to look at that. And we will once again be beaming into your home from our own homes. You can visit the Siegel Center's Facebook and YouTube pages at 11. I hope you can join live with your morning coffee, but you can catch up later with the show if you'd like at the Siegel's social pages. We'll see you this Sunday. In the meantime, I'm Sarah J.A., and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Still to come, Anena Ridvald is a master mask performer and mime, and she draws on family experiences to craft a new show about life on the spectrum. How to say a lot without saying much in the silence of sky later this hour. Kiki Dranius is a Meta-winning poet, writer, and theater creator. I especially loved her first work, Going Up, a psycho-erotic thriller set in an industrial elevator. Well, Kiki has a new show in a very different but out-of-the-box venue, the storied Masonic Temple Hall at 1850 Sherbrooke Street West. This time, Kiki is drawing on the Greek muses and support groups to tackle the morality and the fairness of love. We enter a Love Anonymous meeting where the muses put a reckless lover on trial. The big cast here is a talented, diverse bunch drawn from the local scene, including Matthew Cabway, Howard Rosenstein, and Christine Rodriguez, as well as Anton May, who joined Kiki and I on a call last week. You'll want to listen here not just for details about the show, but Kiki and Anton's honest and upfront descriptions about how hard it is to mount an independent theater production. If you have ever wondered what your ticket price goes toward, Kiki will break it down for you. Here is our conversation. Welcome, Kiki and Anton, to Upstage. Thanks for being here. How are you both doing today?
Hi, Sarah. We're good. We're both good. We just finished rehearsal.
Okay. Hi, Sarah. Thanks for having us.
I'm imagining that rehearsal is like bristling. Like there's a lot of energy in the room, partly because Kiki here has a lot of energy, but also because you're, how many people, eight people strong in the cast, all very talented professional actors. Tell me, what is the rehearsal room energy like?
Ooh, chile.
Right?
The rehearsals are honestly amazing. I mean, I guess from my, where I'm coming from as an actor and performer in the show, like many actors and performers in Montreal, it's just refreshing to be back in the room and with such a stellar cast. Like, who would have thought that my first show back, my comeback would be with such a star-studded cast? It was quite intimidating, but I'm learning so much through all the discussions that we have on the text and all the, it's just, Kiki, talk, please, before I go off.
No, stop. Are you kidding? You're amazing. Honestly, Sarah, it's incredible. It's so friendly and so full of, I don't know. I mean, so full of permission to express ourselves, mm-hmm. and to listen to each other. Mm-hmm. And we have this incredible director that just gives everyone space to become and to flourish like on an organic level. Mm-hmm. And we have this like incredible stage manager to add to the mix, mm-hmm. Sierra. Mm-hmm. It's pretty dope. Sarah.
You just mentioned the director, and you have in the past directed, I think you do a lot of writing and directing as well, Kiki, but you're, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're handing over the reins to Diana Fajrazel, if I said that right.
No, we pronounce her name Fajrazel.
Yeah. You're working with director Diana Fajrazel.
No, eyes, like eyes, fire as in fire, eyes as in I see, and L, Fajrazel.
Fajrazel. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, because I too was trying to figure out how to pronounce the last name.
So Diana is the director, but also the sound director, which is, I think, mm-hmm. you don't mm-hmm. often see that. Tell me about working with her, for both of you from your perspectives, very quickly. Kiki, go ahead.
Diana is the most generous and the most open, honestly, individual that I've, and not to mention the most interesting. I find her uber interesting. She's full of laughter. She's also profound and extremely intelligent. So working next to her, I just feel completely, utterly grateful, honestly. She's just wonderful.
Yeah.
And for you, yeah. Anton?
It's honestly been quite an amazing experience, and it's not even over. Like, it's very rare that you get into a space with directors who have their vision, but are also so open and willing to adapt and change and are interested to hear suggestions from the actors. There's some moments in the play where there's some sort of like choreography and like some sort of like, you know, I'm not gonna give away too much, but you know, there's certain things, and you know, sometimes you don't have all the answers, but I feel like in this project, like everybody's voice is being heard. when we put out suggestions, they're taken in. And it's always like a yes and with Diana. And I love that with her.
You need that openness really to flourish, I think, as a performer. I'm exactly. speaking with Anton May and Kiki Dranius. We're talking about the trial, the love trial, sorry. And it is coming to a fascinating venue, which I'm going to ask about very soon. But Kiki, I wanted to start with a story. I've totally blew right past that. You are a Greek Canadian and you're drawing inspiration from Greek myth here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's an original text, and I'm going to be calling it a modern Greek tragedy. And it was written under the scope of the eight notions of love that were once defined by the ancient Greeks. And I just wanted to explore what these eight notions were, because I was once at the initial inspiration came after a day I spent at a recovery center, an addiction treatment center, when a close friend of mine was struggling with addiction issues. And at the center, there were like all these testimonials that were offered from the people that were checked in and looking, you know, to seek help. And there were all these different types of addictions that were addressed, like drugs, booze, sex, gambling, eating disorders. But by the end, I realized that everybody shared, had an addiction of sorts, but it was really, there were two underlying common factors that everybody in the room had. It was my assessment. And I just found that everybody shared a sense of low self-worth, okay? If I may say, well, it's just what it is. And there was like a deep underlying common factor with that low sense of self-worth, but also everybody was yearning for an approval from people and from those who matter most. And then when I walked away, the next day I woke up and I was like, wait a minute, these two issues, these two common factors are practically as prevalent, if not equally, in all of us, addicts or not. We're all yearning for love. We all want love. We all want approval. So I took these eight notions of love and I took these addiction issues and I came up with the love trial. And it was a story I started writing about 5 or 6 years ago, and I didn't touch it till last October.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I applied for a grant at the Canada Council to write it and to develop it. And I received the first grant from them, and that was amazing. And we did it. I wrote it I rewrote it. I locked myself up for 2 weeks at home and I rewrote it. And then we went into workshop.
Wow.
in December, and then cut to the production grant. And I got it. I got the okay in mid-September. And then I had to scurry and get everything together. The director stayed on. Only two of the original actors were available. And there you go. So, yeah. And I got the venue. And
so I just want to ask you, Anton, very quickly about the role that you're going to be playing. Because as I understand it, the audience is, you just made the funniest face there here on Zoom. We're all witness, judge, and jury to our eight characters. So who are you playing and what are we going to be judging you on?
I thought you'd never ask. So I am in a particular position in the show where I will be initially playing the role of Echo, which may or may not, I'll let Kiki answer that question, but it may or may not be related to the myth of Echo and Narcissus, but I'm playing Echo as well as a variety of other characters. I feel like my character serves as, I wouldn't say I'm like an omnipotent power, but I am a watcher and overseer, and I'm present in every scene. And
totally, the characters.
The characters, they don't necessarily see me, but they feel and they hear my presence. And yeah, I love that. But there are some times where I'm actually in the scenes and I'm playing along with the characters, but you know, I'm always just there.
Yeah,
commenting.
One of those overseeing, all-seeing characters.
Yeah.
That is the voice of Anton May, who's performing in The Love Trial. It is written by Kiki Geranius. The venue is incredible. You got, I'm sure every Montrealer has passed by this place countless times and never set foot inside. I think I've only been once. It's the Masonic Temple Hall on Sherbrooke, or Masonic?
Yeah, it's the Masonic Memorial Temple Hall.
Kiki, how did you... And it's a Greco-Roman style building. It's very old. Yes, and so it's exactly. A perfect place to do something that draws on Greek myth.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, honestly, Sarah, ever since I was a little girl, I'd drive by there. And I'd always fantasize about having a show in there. I'm not kidding. And then
dreams come true.
Yeah. I was sitting there having lunch with one of the actors, who's Howard Rosenstein, because we're good friends. And I said to him, you know, I always wanted to have a show at the Masonic. And he looks at me, he's like, well, fuck a duck. I know the director there. So I was like, oh. So he made a call, he introduced us, and boom, the venue was made available to us.
That is so much fun. Now, is it a traditional kind of theater space? Did you kind of have to adapt or make changes? Because it's more of a meeting hall than a theater.
Well, yeah, I mean, the whole script is, as you know, it's in the form of a fictional love trial. And the way it's set up, the seating gives perfectly for a trial.
It's so perfect.
And it's amazing. Honestly, it's really magical. And we're having it in the Scottish Rites Room up on the top floor. And so it's really fitting for a trial.
Kiki, you're producing your own show. You were just talking mm-hmm. earlier about the grant writing process and getting approved. And it's such an excruciating process for a lot of people. I think that's a shared experience. But producing a show on your own, it doesn't just happen, right? It can be, you wanted to talk about, like, lift the curtain a little bit behind all the work that goes into putting on your own show.
Well, I mean, I have the grant from the Canada Council. The whole show costs $100K. The Canada Council obviously didn't give me $100K, so I have to raise the balance through ticket sales and sponsorships. And I do not have the backing of board members. I don't have the backing of other government funding bodies. So it's a lot of pressure, you know. And I'm a single mom, and I don't want to go in there. I mean, basically, I may lose my shirt and my skirt for the show. But I mean, that's not going to happen because it's all fine. But I have to raise basically 20 to 30,000 bucks through ticket sales and sponsorships. It's a big pressure. I have to sell about 600 tickets to do so and raise sponsorships, which is pretty big for a one-woman independent producer.
Absolutely. And hats off to you. I think when as audience members, when we go see shows, we don't necessarily know, like we know we're paying a ticket price. We don't necessarily know how the sausage gets made, and we'll see grants and thank yous and a season sponsor or a show sponsor for established theater companies, right? We see that in the program. We hear it at the beginning of the show, but we don't know how all that gets calculated. So I appreciate you being upfront about what it means. And it really does come down to dollars and cents. We think
it's really scary. It's scary. Yeah. I mean, you don't know. Are people going to come? In the beginning, I had a choice. It was mid-September. Do I accept a grant or not?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then there's a part of me that like says I'll do anything for this story to come to life. So there's a fine line, you know, like, am I taking a calculated risk? Am I taking an impulsive risk? Am I taking a risk based on courage? Do I believe in myself enough to go for it? And then at one point you wake up and you're like, oh my God, what have I committed myself to? You know? So you're just on it. But I have all these incredible people supporting me. I have my family. I have my son's father, my son's father. I have all these wonderful sponsors, but ultimately I have to bust my, you know,
yeah.
I have to do it.
No, Kiki, as we mentioned, you have Diana Fire Eisel, who is your director. You've stepped back from directing. You're the writer and creator and obviously running the show. But, you know, do you feel like by giving up a little bit of creative control, you also have a big cast too? Like, does that balance out? Like, are you able to kind of distance yourself a little bit from the production? Or like, is it more difficult to balance, you know, watching the creative process unfold while also worrying about the bank account at the end of the day?
You know, I trust Diana entirely, but I'm also the producer. So, you know, like we work together. So being the producer, you're just checking in once in a while, making sure things are, you know, going accordingly and things are happening. And honestly, I have full faith in this woman's capacity, and I have full faith in the cast. And I have full faith in Sierra, who is the stage manager. And I have faith in myself as my capacity. So I think everything is going to be okay. Tickets are selling, but they got to keep selling. I have 600 tickets to sell.
And I'll mention where we can get tickets in just a moment. Anton, very quickly before we wrap up here, for you as a performer, you're in this big cast. It's a big production. And to hear Kiki, though, be so honest about all the work it takes to get this up and running. And it's a world premiere, of course. No one's ever seen this show before. What's that like for you being in the cast?
It's honestly, I understand the hustle and the struggle. You know, as talented and as professional as I am, I'm still very much new to the scene. And a lot of people don't know, or they do understand and know, like you have to work your way up to these kind of shows. And I've been in shows where it's been like every single person in the cast has to at least find one sponsor, has to sell a certain amount of tickets. Otherwise you have to pay the balance. Like I understand what goes into a show, which is why anytime I do a show, whether I hate it or I love it, I am promoting the hell out of it. And, you know, sometimes people are like, oh, there's a show, I know, I'll go see it. And then they end up, usually the second week is where all the tickets are going to be sold. Because, you know, you got those people like, oh, I saw the show, it's amazing, you should go see it. And then you have all the sold out shows in the last week. But, you know, it's like, it takes a village and it takes a community, it takes mm-hmm. a cast to kind of mm-hmm. help with the success of a show, you know?
It's so fascinating to hear that perspective of really all hands on board, and you have mm-hmm. to all work together to make it a success. Mm-hmm.
You have no idea. This gentleman over here, Anton, has four roles, okay? Yes, he's the echo. Yes, he's the Greek priest. Yes, he's the response. And yes, he's the meeting maestro. And he transitions from role to role effortlessly. I'm not kidding. I mean, to me, Anton, honestly, sweetie, I'm so grateful, and I have such huge respect for what you do and how you do it.
I love this. Okay, you say something nice about Kiki now, Anton.
Kiki, I've been a fan. Well, you know, I'm new to the scene, but I've been a fan since Going Up.
Well, that was when I came out too.
Listen,
I didn't do anything before.
You had me at the poster. The poster is what sold it for me. And then the show was the cherry on the top. Okay.
Thanks, babe. Thank you.
Nothing but love here, speaking with Kiki Janius and Anton May. Thank you both so much for taking the time to speak with me. I appreciate it. The jury will be convened starting December the 2nd. Thank you again.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Anton.
That was the Love Trial writer, Kiki Janius, and performer Anton May. 7 showings beginning December 2nd at 8 p.m. until Sunday the 11th at a very cool venue, Masonic Temple Hall at 1850 Sherbrooke Street West downtown. Tickets are $32. Visit purpledivine.com for tickets and more information. You can also visit thelovetrial.eventbrite.ca for the box office. I'm Sarah Day. You're listening to Upstage on CKU. UT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. And Anna Rydvold intends to say a lot without actually saying very much. The performer and writer mines her family's experience with members who live on the spectrum, especially one person in particular whose life is severely affected mentally and physically by her condition. Anna's nonverbal mask and mime show, The Silence of Sky, looks at the bonds of family and how they knit even tighter together when faced by challenges. Anna's company, Level 4 Theater, is teaming up again with Infinite Theater Company to present this brand new show, which brings Anna to work once more with her Infinite Theater artistic director, Zach Fraser. Both are also colleagues of the theater department at John Ibbitt College. Anna is a Meta-winning actress and mask specialist, originally from Denmark, having come to Montreal to study with the Grand Ballet Canadien at the tender age of 12. Anna is gearing up to present the premiere of the new show tonight, with more shows to come through December 5th. Here is my conversation with Anna and Zach about Silence of Sky from last week. Welcome to Upstage, Anna and Zach. Great to have you with me today. How are you?
Good. Great. Thank you.
So Anna is no stranger to Infinite Theater. You have produced shows, performed in shows for the company before. Mm-hmm. Zach, I'll ask you, what was the interest in having Anna back to perform Silence of Sky?
Well, the last time, actually, no, it's not. I say the last time, but you've been busy. You've had a few things going on with Infinite Theater in recent years. But Anna's last solo piece that she was kind enough to ask me the last time to direct her in her piece, Love Child. And that was how many years ago, Anna? Did you say 8 years ago?
No, actually, it was 2015 that we did it.
2015, so six.
And then, so I guess I
6 years ago.
You, yeah, a little before that. So yeah, it's been about six and a half years ago.
Yeah. And that one was, you know, it was a very different piece, but very much, it's like a trilogy of pieces that you've been creating. If I could, is that fair to say? And here we are, Sarah, you're asking me questions and I'm interviewing Anna at the same time. I'm like, what is your story, Anna?
Zach, you are artistic director now of Infinite Theater. So you're the big boss. So we can ask you questions now.
Well, there you go. But no, I mean, it's bringing another piece by Anna. I think audiences love Anna, her work, her style. I think Anna's got a unique voice as an artist. And what I really like is it's a real combination of bringing together a unique artistic style of storytelling, whether it be the last show, which was half masks and spoken, or this one, which is full masks and nonverbal. But there's also a really, there's always a good sense of humor, but also really exploring her own life, family dynamics. And I find that it is very specific to Anna's life, but also so much of it relates to all of us. So it's both unique and very accessible.
Very really, yes, it has to be, doesn't it? So tell us about what kind of elements about family life you're bringing in here. I understand, like, we're cherishing a little bit of it, but we're also exploring some of the difficulties that can come from family relations. Anna, mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I have family members that are on the spectrum, and in this specific show, I'm focusing on my sister who is autistic, and she has a learning disability and a physical disability. And it was quite a challenge for my family, you know, to raise her at first, but then she also brings so much joy, and she's helped everyone grow immensely spiritually. And because you know, when you have a child that's on the spectrum, that's not like a regular child, you look at what's important, like what's really important in life, because there's some things that are tremendously difficult. It's not, you don't reach the milestones that you normally do with a regular child. So there's a lot of, it asks you to be very patient, you know, on many levels. And then when you get through all of that, and you sort of, you understand what landscape you're dealing with, you know, and this, with this unique child, you realize how lucky you are, you know, after a while, you just realize, like, once you get used to all of those hardships, and if you get through it, you realize what a gift it is to have a child with special needs. I don't know if I'm saying this properly. It's sort of, it's very emotional for me. So I kind of get tongue-tied a bit when I do speak about it. I don't really know how to put it into words. So I hope I said it in a way that's accessible.
I think you put it in very, very good terms. And so I can only ask next, is that partly why this is a mind piece and you're working with masks here?
But it's also because I've always loved working with the body first. I love dancing. When I was a child, I was first introduced to the arts through dance. And, I remember this moment when I was, I guess around, 10 years old, I got this role in a ballet piece, and I was looking out at the audience from the wings, and then I stepped into the light and did this gesture, and I felt like there was this spiritual moment happening between me and the audience. It was just such a beautiful, magical moment, and I had no fear, I had no anxiety as a performer. It wasn't like an ego thing either. It was just, here we are, I'm up here communicating something and you feel it too. And it's just beautiful. And and I guess I've always wanted to go back to that feeling, because later on when I studied to be an actress and I've been out there working, there are times, many times, where you don't feel free or you feel judged. And I think I've always kind of wanted to go back to that feeling that I had when I was 10. And this show is actually making me feel that way again. It's, I guess I just have that sort of love for gestures and that physical exploration of people, how they, when they feel tremendous feelings, how do they express themselves physically? And I wanted to go back to that, really. I've always wanted to tell a story without words. And then I wanted to do it on a subject that's very close to my heart, because my son is also on the spectrum. So I felt like, well, this is it. This is the story that touches me the most. And this is the way, this way of expressing myself touches me the most as well. So, so that's why those two things came together. And that's why it became The Silence of Sky.
Hearing from Anana Ridvald and as well Zach Fraser, director, The Silence of Sky, as Anana just mentioned, coming to Kin Experience this week, starting tonight. Thank you so much for sharing all of this. So when you talk about, you know, these family issues, things that are close to the heart, you know, did you turn to anyone else in your family for guidance about what was appropriate to share, or like curious to get other people's experiences or feedbacks and incorporate them into the show? Or is this an Anana production only?
It's a very much Anana production, because it's also not completely the whole story, obviously. There's also parts of me. In some ways, I do feel like I am Sky as well. And there is a story, and there is a story in there that's more sort of related to my life experience, and that is not related to my sister's experience. But I did obviously talk to my dad about it, about raising my sister and especially my other sister as well. I wanted to make sure that I didn't do anything that would make the family feel too vulnerable, you know what I mean? And so I did prepare them, because it does go, there's a couple of scenes that are kind of intense. I'm like, are you okay with that? Are you okay if I do that? And especially with my dad, and he was like, no, that's fine. Go ahead. And also I have to say, I mean, because it is a mind piece, you know, you are also at a disadvantage in terms of not being able to tell the story in all its details, because you don't have language. So it does become this very simple language. So the scenes are quite, they're not as complex, you know? But in some ways, I think it's nice too, because it sort of becomes this metaphor of what happened. Yeah, what would you, do you want to add to that, Zach?
In terms of the story style, I mean, you and I speak about this a lot. And just yesterday, I think in rehearsal, in the, over the last few days, we're like, what is the style of this piece? What is this piece? Where does it fit in the realm of storytelling and theater? And you were like, it's a lullaby. I think it's a lullaby. And I think that there is an aspect to that that's true. Sometimes I think it's, on some level, it's closer to dance, or it's closer to the language of puppetry sometimes and mask, where it has to be distilled storytelling. From my perspective, having just finished Omimuna with another solo performance, again, two artists working very much from lived experience and family stories, but then fictionalizing it, taking artistic liberties. The other piece was very text-based, and this one here, you know, it, you know, we've got video projections, so there is an, on some level, text, but I'm excited with audiences to see how they respond to it, because I don't think it's not your typical play, and it's not your typical solo show. So, but I think that it's so if you go in with an open mind and just allow yourself to be surprised, I think it's a very worthy piece of theater. And even, I don't know what you'd say, Anana, but I think it's been really interesting, especially this week. One of the areas of focus has been Troy Slocum's sound design for the piece, and working how that becomes a really, it's very intricately woven into Anana's onstage presence. It's very much playing together.
Mm-hmm. It's like the whole thing, the whole piece is like a musical score, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's so funny, because I was about to ask you, Zach, about like for you just coming off Omimuna, where you're directing Mohsen with a personal story about his great grandmother, and he's traveling and he's uncovering family history. And here you are working with Anana, who's talking about more recent family history, but very intimate stuff as well. And for you as the director, what that's like to give guidance about the people's own stories, but you have to obviously shape and kind of be there and give suggestions and things like that. It must be a fascinating perspective.
I mean, these are both artists that I have a deep appreciation for, and quite frankly, not to discredit myself or any of the rest of the team, they have such a clear vision of what they want to do already, both Mohsen and Anana. And so a lot of it, directing in this kind of a process, is very much I have no shame in saying each of these two artists, and Anana's her own artistic lead on this, and I come in to play leader when she wants someone else to take the driver's seat, but ultimately she's the one planning out the major course. And so it's, you know, helping an artist find their best way of telling their own story is I'm going to call it like light touch directing, but it's fun because Anana makes my work easy in that sense. So,
but he makes it easy too. I mean, I find like all his direction, I'm always like, oh, a light bulb goes off. Like, yes, of course. That's great. That's why I love you. That's why we're doing this.
And Anana, and you, if I can jump, like to say, Anana and I, like, I think we first met, interestingly, I wasn't even thinking about this until this moment, Anana, but the first time I encountered Anana when I moved to Montreal was by seeing her first solo show, Section O. The first time I ever saw Anana was on stage. And based on that solo show, I reached out to Anana and said, hey, you, I'd like us to work together sometime. So then we worked on a different thing. And then we ended up being colleagues at John Abbott College. And then we worked on the second show together. But I mean, we've always known, even at Abbott, as colleagues, even though we never teach in the same classroom together, we've always been very like-minded in our approach to like, what do we value in theater and storytelling, and what are the elements that most excite us? Mm-hmm. I think we've always been on the same page for that.
Yeah, we have.
It's lovely because I'm hearing not just a story about Anana's artistic views and your family, but I'm also hearing a story about collaboration and partnership. And I'm looking for drama and tension. You guys are saving it for the stage. It's not happening backstage or in the rehearsal room at all.
No.
Anana and Zach, it's been such a pleasure to speak with you both. Break a leg, both of you, for Silence of Sky. It's been great. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
That was Anana Ridvald and Zach Fraser of Infinitheater. She is the performer and creator of The Silence of Sky. He is the director. And both are getting ready for the premiere tonight at Kin Experience 397A St. Catherine Street West. It's near the Bay. It continues until December the 5th. Tickets are $15 to $30. Discounts for students, seniors, performers, as well as groups. Visit infinitheater.com or call 514-987-1774 extension 104 for tickets and more information. This show is also on Eventbrite. You have been listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. Tonight you heard from Superdogs the Musical, director Sarah Rodriguez and animal trainer Danielle Pichette. Previews start this Sunday. The Love Trial, writer and creator Kiki Dranius and actor Anton May, coming December 2nd. And The Silence of Sky, performer Anana Ridvald and director Zach Fraser, opening this evening at Kin Experience, Break a Leg. A very big thank you to my guests. And I'll also mention that the annual Die Hard, the all-woman live read, returns this Thursday, December 2nd, directed by Terrence Bowman, the improviser and performer. He's directing an all-star cast of local funny ladies in a live online performance on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch. It's free with donations accepted for the Canadian Women's Foundation. I loved last year's reading of this Bruce Willis Christmas classic, and I'm happy to see many returning and new faces taking part. It will be up on all three platforms for 24 hours after the live show on December 2nd. Visit CanadianWoman.org for more information. You can hear past episodes of Upstage at CKUT.ca under the archives. Thank you to Jack Soler, our spoken word coordinator, for making sure this show gets to air. And a very big thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Sarah DeAy. Speak with you next time on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and CKUT.ca. Have fun and stay safe. Up next is Grey Matters.
Polo and Pan, Cyclorama Tour. Polo and Pan. December 11th, Place Belle. One night only in Montreal. Get tickets now at evenco.ca. Polo and Pan, Cyclorama Tour.
If you have flu-like or COVID-19-like symptoms, such as fever, cough, loss of taste or smell, or if you have been in contact with someone infected with the virus, it's essential to get tested and to follow isolation instructions, even if you're vaccinated. Screening remains one of the best ways to limit outbreaks. To find out more, visit quebec.ca/test-covid-19. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Good evening and welcome to the November 25th edition of Grey Matters. Tonight on the show we have a lecture by Noam Chomsky entitled Tipping Points, Environmental and Political. It was a lecture delivered in Oro Valley, Arizona on September 30th of this year. Noam Chomsky is, of course, a world-renowned professor of linguistics at MIT. Chris Hedges described him as America's greatest, who makes the powerful as well as their liberal apologists deeply uncomfortable.